the left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Yell. Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
All right, let's get it going. Happy Friday. It's Friday, November 22nd, and we are underway this hour on Flames Talk. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. My name is Pat Steinberg. It's a Friday, which means it's now time for the Eric Francis Hour. Brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. The Alberta horse racing and breeding industry cares for their horses, employs Albertans, and contributes to the economy. Visit thehorses.com. 18 plus. Please play responsibly. And now, after a rousing tennis match and some great time on the hard court, it's time to check in with Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca for the next hour. Boy, do we got a lot to dive into on this Friday, EF. What's going on, my friend?
Marty Gelinas and I wiped the floor with our two opponents today. Just want that on the record.
How much of that is Marty and how much of that is you?
Hey, it doesn't matter. It's a team effort, and the important thing is we got the W. It doesn't matter who lifted heavier weight on that one.
You know,
it is pretty funny seeing Marty Gelinas out there, still got the best damn legs in Alberta, and you could see ladies 2 and 3 courts away gawking at him, you know, just see it. Oh, look at those legs on him. Oh, my God, is that Marty? Anyway.
The man,
it's fun to watch.
Do you think that he could go out and play a few shifts in the NHL without, like, he's 54 years old. I think he could go out and play still. And, he, you know, probably full game. It might, as anybody would, it might become noticeable. But I think you could pop 23 out there right now for a few shifts and nobody would notice that's a 54-year-old man.
Oh, my God, yeah. And he'd still be better than, like, Phil Kessel or someone like that, you know, someone who doesn't take
stray.
Care of themselves.
No
yeah, sorry, Phil.
That's
but
funny.
I can promise you Marty's not mixing many hot dogs into his diet
at
age 54.
Absolutely. Nope. One of Alberta's Calgary's best human beings, so that
absolutely
is very true. EF, it is it's a really interesting time around here. So the Flames completed the 20th game of their schedule on Thursday night, a 3-2 win over the New York Rangers. And so essentially they're a quarter of the way through their season. And I know you wrote about this over at Sportsnet.ca on Friday. Wes and I last hour got into some burning questions about the first quarter of the season. Man, let's just dive in on the first 20 games of the season and what we've seen, what we haven't seen, what we've liked, what we haven't liked, so on and so forth. And we'll get into the nitty-gritty of your article, which, you know, you've got some really interesting categories that you wrote about. Again, it's up and has been for the last little while on Sportsnet.ca. But how would you just sum up, if you were to say, Eric Francis, how do you sum up the first quarter of Calgary season? Like, what are the words and phrases that come to mind for you?
Well, you know, for lack of a better word, a fun would come to mind. Like, when I'm talking to people around town, that's basically what this all boils down to. This is a whole lot of fun to watch. Hey, whether they make the playoffs or not, to me, is not relevant at this point in time. People should just be enjoying the ride, enjoying the fact that they're clearly moving in the right direction. Look, there are warts, and we'll talk about those as we dissect the first 20 games. But at the end of the day, it would be impossible for you to be a Calgary Flames fan right now and not be encouraged by what you've seen the first 20 games of the season. And I know there's all sorts of debate over whether or not long-term this is for the best for the organization. But guys, this is entertainment. And we're in the entertainment business, and this is bloody entertaining. Whether they win or lose, they're keeping every game close. They're never quitting. They're, you know, more comebacks than any team in the league. Like, what's not to like? Like, I guess that would be what I would push back at anyone who says, yeah, but I don't want to hear any buts right now. I think that people should just be enjoying the hell out of what they're seeing so far. Am I dead wrong or what?
I'm of the same opinion. Like, I here's kind of where I'm at on the whole thing, because I do understand the being torn in two different directions side of things.
Yeah, I do too. I do too.
My feel has been, you've got a general manager who's been very transparent. I don't know a lot of GMs who are as transparent as Craig Conroy has been when it comes to messaging his vision to fans. So you've got this general manager who is very, very transparent, who's been clear about the timeline for this plan, who's been clear about the kind of different steps on the road to their final destination. He's told us that the plan has never been for this group to try to be bad or to tank or anything like that. They're not tearing it down all the way to the studs, so on and so forth. They just came off what many people in the industry believe was an epic draft in Las Vegas in 2024. They've got young players who are more and more contributing in a big way to this team and their success. So my opinion has kind of been, you've got a guy that a lot of people seem to trust. You've got a guy that has a vision. I think this is honestly year one of Craig Conroy's plan. I think last year was kind of year zero, where he had to do a lot of housekeeping just to get to year one. This is year one of a 3 to 5 year plan. Let the guy cook and enjoy the ride, whatever. Embrace the wins and deal with the losses and all that type of stuff. Like, you're allowed to have nice things as a Flames fan. And I know that Flames fans don't always get nice things, and there's been a lot of heartbreak over the last 30 years. But, like, you're allowed to enjoy nice things. So I'm kind of like, trust Craig Conroy's got a vision, and he's going to stick with the vision and enjoy whatever happens. Because the last thing that I've always said is that, hey, Eric Francis, me, you listening, we have zero control over what happens. So you might as well enjoy the ride, right?
Listen, the mandate from ownership is to win. Sure, you know, not win at all costs and don't sacrifice the future right now. But it's the mantra is, we need to win, you know, now while you're also rebuilding, retooling, whatever you want to call it. Think about the one thing that's going their way more than anything right now is their culture. Everyone in that room wants to be there. Everybody in that room is displaying a work ethic that's, you know, I won't say the envy of the league, but there's a lot of fan bases that wishes their team, they worked as hard as the Calgary Flames did with a whole lot more talent that the other teams have. But they are building something in that room that they can pass on from year to year. And it's a tangible, it's something that every team is trying to build. If your team tank, you're killing the culture. Nobody wants to be there long-term because everybody's thinking, I just want off this ship right now. Call me in 5 years when you've turned this around. That's the way a lot of team tanks work. Right now, every guy's in there is loving what's happening in there. Everyone in this city is loving what's happening. Like, I'm not really sure how. I get team tank. I get how people are conflicted. I get how this could cost them their first round draft pick that the Canadians are now going to take and could take. I get all that, but I don't understand how team tank could be poking their head up right now and being all loud and saying, this is the wrong way to do it. Like, in the summer, I could understand that. But given the way things have started here, now is not the time to be a proud team tank guy, in my opinion. I think the hybrid way is the way they're going to go. I think it's working out so far. Do I think they're building, it is going to cost them a draft pick potentially. That is the unfortunate thing. But I think that that's something we should be talking about in 2, 3, or 4 months from now, because a lot can change between now and trade deadline time.
Well, let's dive in on some of the different things that we've seen this year. Over at Sportsnet.ca, you went through this, broke it down. What's your most encouraging development, Francis? What did you narrow in on? Because there have been a lot of encouraging developments this year.
Well, the goaltending. I mean, I don't think this wasn't much of a choice. It's, you know, the goaltending is what's got them where they are right now. It's the talk of the town. It's not the talk of the league yet, but as people do look from around the league at what the Flames are doing, they are realizing quite quickly the backbone of it all is the goaltending. And that was the biggest question mark going into the season. Now it's their biggest strength. Nobody saw that coming. So, that is the most encouraging thing to me. I mean, you tell me what they... I'm sure you would agree the goaltending is the most encouraging thing. Is there anything that even comes a close second or third in your mind, like if you were to put together a list?
I think, and I guess it depends on like what your criteria is, but I think the one that I, and goaltending is included in this, I think the one that has been most encouraging to me is the fact that they're doing all this, and it's not like they're relying only on a bunch of veterans. Like the fact that Connor Zeri and Dustin Wolf and Matt Coronato and Kevin Ball, these are all guys who are 25 years and younger and are potentially large parts of this team for the long term. They've kind of been in a lot of ways on top of Rasmus Anderson and Mackenzie Weegar and Michael Backlund. And but the fact that young players have been in such prominent places and have been so crucial in the team being where they are a quarter of the way through the year, like, to me, that's the most encouraging development, is how much they're getting from the young players on their team right now. And one of those guys, and maybe the leader of that pack, is Dustin Wolf. So it would kind of be one of those two for me, what I just said, or goaltending. And I guess goaltending intersects with what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I thought you might say Kevin Ball in terms of, you know, one of the most encouraging developments. And so I think, to your point, you can lump them all. You can lump them all in and say, the fact that the youth movement is definitely afoot. They're playing prominent roles. They're only going to get better. But they are a big part of this team. You've got your leaders, your seven leaders, and you've also got, you know, four or five of your young guys who are, like, there's a core of 12 or 13 guys on this team that are making this all happen. And it's pretty impressive.
Yeah. Okay, so then on the other side, what's the most concerning thing that we've seen?
That they can't score goals. I mean, you know, this is they're doing all this and having this success despite the fact that they are struggling offensively. You know, in the bottom 10 of the NHL in terms of goals for and goals against. Listen, I was looking at all these crazy numbers where, you know, at times like this, you're just swamped by all sorts of crazy numbers. And they're fourth in the West, but they've got a zero goal differential. Like, they've scored as many goals as they've allowed. You go look at all the top 16 teams in the National Hockey League, and they're one of only, I think, two or three teams that have a even or, you know, negative goal differential. Like, it just doesn't happen. Teams don't make playoffs with an even goal differential. It just doesn't happen. So they need to pick that up. But that said, I think there's plenty of reason to believe that they will. Like, I still think that this is they've got quite a lot of different talent between youth and veterans that can pick up their game significantly. And I think at the very top of the list, I really do believe is Matt Coronato, whose confidence since that game in Montreal, I remember saying, well, that's it. You'll never see him back in the minors again. This changes everything. And I really believe that. And I think we've seen that ever since. He's tied for the team leading goal scored. And I think that, you know, I would not be surprised at all if by the end of the year, you know, he's a 25 or 30 goal scorer and he leads this team. So I do think that they have lots of room for improvement and they will improve offensively.
It's funny because I think you mentioned the goal differential. There was not one team in the red in the Western Conference that made the playoffs last year. The only eight teams that made the playoffs, the only eight teams who had a plus goal differential last year were the eight playoff teams. Every other team had a minus goal differential. The East was a little bit of a different story. Capitals made it at minus 37, and the Islanders made it at minus 17. But you don't see that very often, right?
No, exactly. So that's got to change. You know, a big part of this whole discussion with the Calgary Flames these days, and I know you guys talk about it on the air, and everybody in their houses is talking about it in the office. The question is this sustainable? Like, is any of this sustainable? It sure seems like house money to a lot of people. Like, oh, this is a great start and everything. They probably won't make the playoffs, but what a great start. And look at all these great encouraging signs. I think that's a fair way of looking at it. But in terms of offensively, I still think this group has a whole lot more to give.
I'm curious on the side of the offense, like how much more offense is there? Because you're right, like, you take a look at some of the veterans, Nazem Kadri or Jonathan Huberdeau or Blake Coleman, you know, some of the Andre Kuzmenko, like some of the players on this group that you expected to be amongst the leaders offensively have yet to really find their offensive groove. And yet, at the same time, I don't know going into this year, like how much of a high-scoring team did you expect this team to be coming into the season? Right now, the Flames are 23rd in the NHL, averaging 2.6 goals per game. Like, how much higher do we expect that to be? You know, they're 23rd right now, or should they be 21st? Should they be 15th? Should they be 5th? Like, when you take a look at their roster, how much more offense should there be on this group?
Yeah, when I look at their roster, I think that they can get near the middle of the pack in the National Hockey League. I really do. I mean, Connor Zary, I think, for my money, has been the best forward on the team this year in terms of consistency, but he doesn't have a whole lot of points to show for it. Like, that was just his second goal in 16 or 17 games last night. I do believe he's, you know, kind of had some bad luck in that department, but, you know, I think Kadri's got a whole lot more to give, and I think you'll see it. I think just, you know, he had a slow start last year. I think he'll pick it up. Kuzmenko is just so damn talented. He just makes so many bad decisions with the puck. I do feel like that can change. He's a former 39 goal scorer, 37 goal scorer his first year. Like, come on, like that's got to get a little better. I think Coronado is going to start to surge as he gets this. You know, he's got that extra pep in his step and that confidence. I think that, you know, it won't be one guy. I wouldn't be surprised if they don't have a 30 goal scorer this year. But I do think that they can have, you know, two, three, or four 20-goal scorers. Like, I do think by committee is how they're going to get or how they could get to the middle of the pack, if you ask me. But, you know, they've clearly been asked to sacrifice their offense to some degree to play, you know, a very sound defensive game. And you hear that in Coronado's voice when he talks about the game that he's trying to play and the game he's tried to learn over the last couple of years as a pro. So, you know, I don't think the goal is for them to be a top 10 goal scoring team in the league. I'm sure they will be under Ryan Huska ever. This team is tailor made to be a defensive minded team. They've shown that, and that's why the coach wants them to play.
Yeah, and I do think there is the potential for a little more offense. There's no doubt, because I mean Sharangovich is like that.
Yeah.
It's taken a while for Sharangovich to find his groove. I still don't know if he has found it. So I do think there's a little bit more offense here, which I think plays into kind of that next segment of your piece over at Sportsnet, and that is the grades for the top six and bottom six forwards. You went D and B for the top six and bottom six, respectively. How come?
Yeah, I found that interesting. Like, the top six, you know, I gave them a D because they've failed considerably, if you ask me. Huberdeau, Kadri, you know, Sharangovich, Kuzmenko, you know, all these guys, you know, what do they got? 1, 1, 3, and 6 goals, you know, respectively. Pospisil, what has he got? 1 goal, you know, and you don't measure just on goals with them, but it's a big part of how you measure their success. And yeah, they've contributed to the defensive game that this team has played, but it's such a massive split between those 5 or 6 guys I just mentioned. And the bottom two lines, like the fourth line, has been the most consistent all season long. It's certainly the fan favorites. They have a simple assignment, just go out and cause havoc and be tenacious. But they're doing it so well. And then that third line of Michael Backlund and Blake Coleman, whoever they play with, whether it's Zary or whether it's Coronado, they've been effective too in different ways. I know they haven't scored a lot of goals, but they always go up against the other team's top line. So there's a massive difference when you split those 12 forwards in half. And to me, half of them look good. They've done a pretty good job. The other half have really, really let this team down.
Yeah. And I mean, it's hard for me because I don't even know where the delineation is. It's kind of, for me,
I know.
There's 3 and 1. But I do, like, if you were to say the top six forwards, I'd go Kadri, Huberdeau, Backlund, Coleman, Kuzmenko, maybe Zary. I guess I understand where you're getting at, because some of the, depending on, like, regardless of how you want to slot them, the guys that you would look to on this roster and say those are going to be the offensive leaders maybe haven't led offensively the way that you would expect them to. Kadri's numbers are down a little bit. Huberdeau, after a great start, has now regressed to the point where he's on pace for even less than last year. You're like, it's getting worse. Yeah. And you're like, okay, that needs to turn around here. You know, Coleman is still always going to get you a ton in terms of the two-way game and the work ethic and the details. But I think that, you know, after he scored 30 last year, you're looking for a little bit more offense from him. Sharon Govich got off to a really poor start after the injury offensively. So I think in that regard, a D is probably fair, which goes back to the previous point, right? Like, There is room for improvement when it comes to these top players. And if those guys are able to take their game up a couple of steps, this team could be a whole lot more of an offensive threat. And maybe we are talking about them being in the middle tier offensively in this league.
Yeah. And I agree with your point. Like, nobody really believes that Coleman and Backlund and whoever they play with is the third line on this team, but we've kind of always defaulted that that's the way we look at it. Certainly the way they've played, they probably played as more like a first or second line on this team this year. But I get it. You kind of have to draw a line. And, you know, I think it does further illustrate, since I've slotted them as the third line, it really does, you know, put a spotlight on how about the other six guys at the top have been.
And the fourth line's been such a cool story, hey?
Great story. Like, and it's, you
have
know,
you written about, it, like, have you written about Kirkland at all? Or, like, have you dug in on that story at all?
I've been struggling so much lately to not write about Wolf all the time, but I can't help it. He's the story of the season so far for the Calgary Flames. Like, everybody's talking about him. Everyone's excited about him. Everyone had so many questions about him. He's answering so many of them so far. Like, he's a legit story almost every single game. Last night easily could have been a top three star of the game. I don't think he was, but I think it's almost fatigue. Like, people are like, yeah, I joked with the PR staff, hey, please tell Dustin we don't need him tonight. Like, tell him to take the night off. Like, he's constantly in the spotlight. And prior to that, it was Kirkland, because he was such a great story. He is a great story. So many different aspects to him. Lomberg is a great story. So there are two or three storylines that keep, I know you're having some fun with me, but man, like, people can't get enough of this team in some ways. Kirkland is such a you know, strange, new sort of story for this organization. And so is Wolf, and people are enjoying it. It's getting the clicks. I know that.
What was your grade on this team's blue line?
I think I said B. And you know, because they deserve a chunk of credit for what the goaltenders have been doing. And there were a lot of questions about this blue line going into the season. Look, they lost Chris Tanev, Noah Hanifin, Nikita Zadorov last year. So this year they went with three, you know, they had to replace three everyday guys who kind of carried heavy loads. And there were a lot of question marks as to who would fit with who. And, you know, I think instantly the Ball and Anderson duo has been fantastic. I don't think anybody's got any qualms with that. And very pleasantly surprised by Ball. And then, you know, the Uyghur Miromanov to me is a work in progress. But I think lately we've seen some real nice improvements. And Uyghur's been fantastic. It's just Miromanov who's kind of got to pick it up, and he has lately. And then I think Braden Ball's another fan favorite. I think he brings an element that this team was missing ever since Zadorov was gone, you know, a pure hitter. So I gave him a B, because I just think that they've had a lot to say about keeping these goals and chances down. And they've also, two of those guys I just mentioned are the two of the three leading scorers on this team. That's, and true, they happen to be defensemen. So you got to give them a ton of credit for that.
Do you, Francis, do you, when you make these grades, do you do it, like, are you grading on a curve? And I ask this seriously, like, are you grading on a curve, or are you just grading? No, and I'm not, I'm actually asking seriously. I'm not trying to rip your grades at all, because I think it's like, are you grading based on expectations, or just full on objectively giving them a letter grade?
I'm going with my gut, just on what I, you know, how much more I think they can give or could give or should have given. And like, you know, I think we're going to get to the goaltending next. I mean, you know, I gave them an A. I basically thought about giving them an A+. I'm like, I'm not really sure what more they could do, you know, this year so far. I know that Vladar's record isn't quite as good as Wolf's, but he's also played a lot harder teams and had some of the harder assignments on the road and such. So, yeah, I don't know much. You kind of look at what the limit could be for a group and where they landed, you know, with that limit in mind.
Well, the only reason I ask is because I'd probably give the blue line an even higher grade because it was the area that I thought was going to be or could be the team's biggest weakness this year. Goaltending was the area that I was most uncertain about, but the defense was the area that I thought could be their biggest downfall because after Raz and Mackenzie Weegar, you're like, geez, there is not much experience there at all. You've got Kevin Ball, who's got one full NHL season on a third pair under his belt. You've got Jake Bean, who's been injured and really has struggled to kind of live up to his first-round billing when he was selected. You've got Braden Pahal, who's never been a full-time NHLer. You've got Tyson Berry, who's on the back end of his NHL career. You've got Miramanov, who's never been a full-time NHLer, and Hanley, who's never really been a full-time guy. You're like, geez, what are they going to be after Anderson and Weegar? And they've been great. I mean, Kevin Ball has been immensely important to this team finding a true top pairing. Miramanov, as you mentioned, has started to improve. Pahal has been one of the most low-key, large surprises this year and deserves a ton of credits for solidifying the right side of the third pair. And you just can't take that guy out because you know what he brings each and every night. And so based on a curve, I'd probably grade him even higher because like I'd probably give him an A based on what I was expecting from him or what it could have been and what it's been. Like they've been really, really solid as a defense group.
Well, listen, I wish I had more teachers like you when I was in high school, you know, in terms of being more generous with their grades. I can hear that argument. And the biggest reason why I was really worried about these, I'll call them young goalies. I mean, I know Vladar is kind of middle-aged, but, you know, these relatively inexperienced starters was because of the defense. I'm like, so you're going to ask these two guys to come and play in front of a team that gave up a ton of high-danger chances last year as one of their hallmarks, and now you're going to do it in front of a inferior blue line that has not built chemistry of any sort so far. Like, those high danger chances are going to be higher this year. They're going to block less shots. I had all this whole theory as to why, you know, the goalies might not be able to do anything near what they've been doing. And it was largely based on the fact that there were so many questions surrounding the blue line. So yeah, I hear your argument. And they do deserve, you know, full kudos, whether it's an A or a B.
Yeah. And I mean, the way that this group, and I think it's a team thing too, but the way this group is limited to high danger opportunities, they're in the top half of the league in doing that, and that is a really, really impressive feat. Okay, goaltending, I think we're on the same page with, right? Like it's an A, it's got to be an A, right? I mean, they're a top five goaltending team in the NHL. They're tied for fourth in terms of overall team save percentage. They are number one overall at 5-on-5 save percentage. Dustin Wolf's numbers put him amongst the best goalies in the league. Dan Vladar has been very, very impressive with some more difficult spots on the road and so on and so forth. Like I don't know how you could argue what the goaltending grade is.
Yeah, like it's A or A plus, you know, and factor in the fact that Devin Cooley's doing what he's doing in the minors, which gives you even more confidence moving forward that no matter which way you go with Dan Vladar, you know, you've got crazy depth at a position where you weren't sure you even had one guy who was going to be an everyday starter, let alone, you know, quite likely three guys in the NHL. So it's been the biggest home run, as I said, off the top this season. And it's the reason why we're having this conversation full of so much optimism and excitement.
Yep. So you, and by the way, your MVP, Dustin Wolf, I'm with you on that one. My honorary mention or honorable mention rather would be Rasmus Anderson. Most improved player. I'm with you. Matt Coronato. I think that's a no brainer in my eyes. And best defensive player, you went Kevin Ball, and that's a good one as well, because he's really played that role well, hasn't he?
Oh, I mean, there were so many great examples last night alone where he broke up some really significant scoring chances with that long reach of his, that big long stick. So, yeah, him. And, you know, we may be selling Mackenzie Weegar short. Maybe he should be second. Or you could even still go Backlund because he's still taking on the top assignment every night against the best forwards. So, you know, defensively, that's been this team's hallmark. So there are lots of candidates for that gig, but I gave it the ball.
Okay. That article up right now at sportsnet.ca, Flames at the quarter mark, some grades and some other assessments from Eric Francis, and a lot in there and a lot to go through over at sportsnet.ca. The Flames are 20 games in, a quarter of the way in, and we've got lots more still to get to on that front. A couple of questions to wrap up the hour. Eric Francis, Sportsnet and sportsnet.ca here on Flames Talk. My name is Pat Steinberg, and the Eric Francis Hour is brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. The Alberta Horse Racing and breeding industry has an $83 million positive economic impact in Calgary annually. Visit thehorses.com. 18 plus. Please play responsibly.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
Eric Francis Hour rolls on. Eric from Sportsnet and sportsnet.ca here on Flames Talk. It's Steinberg along with you. Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, wherever you get your podcasts, of course, live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Francis, it's been an awesome start, and we just went through the real nitty-gritty of the first 20 games of the season. Flames are number two in the Pacific Division as we speak right now on both points and points percentage. It's been a start that has surprised everybody, or many. So let me ask you this, and you kind of touched on this a little earlier. You wanted me to ask you this question, so in the second part of our Eric Francis Hour, I will. Is this sustainable in your eyes, my friend?
I'm going to say no. No, I don't think it's sustainable, even though I do think they will start to score goals at a higher clip. I'm not sure that defensively they can continue to be this good and that these goalies can be this good for this long and that consistently. I don't think that's being overly negative. I don't think that's a hot take. I don't think many people around the league think this is sustainable. I guess the big question is, what's your definition of sustainable? Like, can they continue to remain second in the Pacific Division? Not on your life. Can they be good enough to make the playoffs? That's becoming a different sort of question. And I'm not sure I'm ready to answer that one yet. I mean, we all went into the season saying, no, I don't think they can. But now I'm seeing so many positive signs and so many things that are so exciting as the franchise moves forward, as opposed to being a neutral as it has been for so many years. I'm not going to sit here and say unequivocally, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs anymore. I've said that all along. I'm starting to change my opinion. I don't think they will, but the question is, you know, can they be close? Yeah, I think they can be close. And that, of course, is the big scare, right? Everybody's scared that they're going to finish close but not in the playoffs. And then, really, what have you accomplished? I don't think it's sustainable at this clip, no.
Yeah, I don't know if I see them remaining number two in the Pacific Division when it's all said and done. But if the question is, do you think that they keep themselves in the playoff mix and keep themselves in the Pacific Division wildcard playoff mix? I mean, sure. Why the hell not? At this point, everything the goaltending has shown us, let's talk a little bit about what we've seen from goaltending, right? Like, has Dustin Wolf shown us that all of a sudden he's just going to fall off a cliff? Is Dustin Wolf winning games because he's getting lucky and, you know, the team is just blocking all the shots in front of him and the puck's just not going? No, it's been Dustin Wolf's been really good and Dan Vladar has been pretty solid. So, like, the goaltending has shown us no reason why it's going to drop off, and it's a ridiculously unpredictable position, so it might, but nothing that I'm seeing says, well, this goaltending, will it remain number four in the NHL all year? Maybe not. But is it going to drop from number four to number 20? Yeah, probably not either. It's probably going to give them more than capable NHL goaltending for the rest of the season. So if that's the case, And if they continue to play with this belief, and why wouldn't they? If they continue to be comfortable and close in one-goal games, and why wouldn't they? Then, yeah, why wouldn't they stay in the playoff mix right till the very end? So in that sense, yeah, I do think there's a chance it's sustainable. And, you know, maybe they don't compete for number one in the division with heavies like Vegas. And if Edmonton figures it out, maybe they enter the conversation too. But I think that they're in this playoff mix right until the very end, unless injuries start to catch up to them, or unless Craig Conroy decides to go super pragmatic and still make a couple of trades at the deadline that maybe weakens their right now roster for the good of the future. Those are the two ways that maybe this drops off a little bit. Because don't forget, Eric, last year this team was, I know they finished 17 points out of the playoffs, but last year this team was in it all the way into the final quarter or so of the season as well. It wasn't until after the trade deadline that the wheels fell completely off, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, I know you usually ask all the questions around here, but I have two for you right now.
Yeah, hit me.
One is, we're just pulling up to a Tim Hortons. Can I get you anything?
Yeah, can you give me a latte? A latte?
Yeah, I gotcha.
Vanilla syrup, if you could.
This is a very Canadian. We're driving in the middle of a snowstorm. We're heading to Hanna, Alberta for a hockey tournament this weekend for my son.
Well, that's awesome.
This is so Canadian and so hockey, and we're pulling up to a Timmy's right now to order our dinner, of course, for the ride. And the other thing I want to know is, so I got you a latte. We're just about to order here. And the other thing is, I'm running the Chuck-a-Puck, which I always run.
Oh.
Yeah, so can you, can I put you down for 8 pucks? It's 20 bucks. 20 bucks for 8 pucks. Can I put you down?
I mean, the pressure, I couldn't say no if I wanted to. Of course you can.
Okay, I'll throw them for you. And if you win, you know how Chuck-a-Puck works. Are you familiar with the Chuck-a-Puck?
I am very, very. I covered the Calgary Canucks for the first like 3 years of my career. We did the puck toss every first intermission.
It's my favorite thing about a weekend. Well, drinking with the other parents is kind of my favorite thing, but. But the Chuck-a-Puck is my second favorite thing. And so, and I always like to take control of it. And I go in and out of the stands selling these pucks. And I love executing the throws. And I won one time. And just you feel like $1 million. So anyway, I got you down for, I got a real special rate for you. 8 pucks for 20 bucks. And I'm going to throw them all on your behalf. And I swear to God, if you win, you're getting all the money.
Okay. I like that.
Okay.
Okay. Sounds
so
good.
Sorry. Where were we about the Flames?
We were talking about how sustainable. Do you need to order live on the air as well, or is the order already made?
No. My wife just ordered.
Okay.
She's just flashing the Timmy's app because every Canadian should have that.
Okay.
And there we go. No, sustainability is the big question, right? Like, and again, I don't think people should be bogged down with that right now, because I love what you said earlier. We can have nice things. Like, why does it always have to be, well, this is great, but, like, people dream of their organization being in a spot where they're very happy and just enjoying the ride. It almost seems to never happen in sports, right? Because after every win, the first question is, well, is it sustainable? Or, oh, well, yeah, but wait till they play this team. Or, oh, can they do it in the playoffs? Or, oh, you know, there's all these questions always. Sometimes it's nice to just sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. And it has been an amazing ride. Look, when we started this season, Pat, I think you and I, sitting over several rum and cokes, were talking about how...
Ryan. I don't know. Ryan diets for me, but of course, yeah.
No, I'm just thinking about what I order. We wondered, right, could this be a lean year in terms of storylines? Because last year there were, you know, it wasn't a great season, and there were some devastating losses in terms of personnel, but there were tons of storylines in terms of, okay, who's Hanifin going to go to? Is he going to sign with the team? Mm-hmm. What's the latest contract offer? There were all sorts of actually, I would dare say that the league was interested in the Calgary Flames for a rare time, because they had so many pieces that teams wanted around the league. This year, we wondered, like, is there anybody big time that's going to be traded at the deadline? Like, there have been storylines that we never saw coming. Is that fair?
Yeah, 100%. I think that's very fair. And I think there's even still more that could develop as this year rolls on.
Agreed. Like, care to predict on what those could be? Because, like, you know, I don't think one thing we've never really thought about, at some point they're going to be calling guys up from the minors. And, you know, is there somewhere in the minors the next Connor Zeri or Martin Pospisil? I mean, those guys are cornerstones of this franchise. And at this time last year, we didn't probably know that. Well, you know, so and is what that going to be another storyline?
What about the storyline of what do they do in terms of player movement? Like, if they're in a really interesting spot ahead of the trade deadline going into February and approaching March, what does Craig Conroy think about adding something? Is that a conversation Flames fans are willing to entertain? And I'm not suggesting yay or nay. I'm just saying, is that a conversation that we start to have? What if somebody comes calling on one of your veterans and offers, you know, veteran X, and they offer a really good package to Craig Conroy, but it's a futures package and it's going to weaken your team right now. But boy, you're getting another first round pick and maybe a really good prospect in this trade offer. Like, what do you do then if you're in a wild card spot or if you're in a divisional playoff spot? Does Craig Conroy, with the big picture still in mind, does he pull the trigger on a deal like that? I think those are some really interesting storylines that could evolve for us and could develop here in the next number of months too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I look at the one guy that I think we know they have to make the hardest decision on so far coming up to the trade deadline is Dan Vladar. I think that might be the toughest decision they're going to have to make, or maybe it's not even a tough decision in your mind. But you know, because I don't think, given the way they've been playing, given how well Rasmus Anderson's been playing, I'm not sure you entertain the possibility. I guess you entertain any possibility, but I'm not sure Rasmus Anderson is going to be a big talk as we get to the trade deadline. Do you think that's fair, or do you think he will be, whether he's in play or not, do you think that there will be a lot of talk around the league that he could be in play?
If it continues like this and the team remains in the mix, I don't think it will be a talking point. You know, I wonder more about a guy like Kadri. I wonder more about a guy like Coleman, somebody like that, or people like those guys could help teams. And would there be interest? And I'm not saying the Flames would be shopping these guys, but I wonder more about, like, what if a team comes and says, hey, we know where you are, but we think Blake Coleman's exactly what we need. We're willing to give you X and Y for this guy. Like, does Craig Conroy say, no, Blake's too much of an important piece of our team? Thank you for the call, but we're not interested. Or does he entertain that? And honestly, on November 22nd, Eric, I don't know the answer to that question.
And again, why are we ruining the fun? But, like, you know, we're just talking. This is easy because these are storylines down the road. But why are we ruining the fun and talking and worrying about that now? Like, I know we're just kind of playing devil's advocate and throwing around stuff, but, like, that's down the road. Like, remember what Nazem Kadri said at, I think it was at the golf tournament.
Pump the brakes.
Pump the brakes. Why don't you just let us play right now and see where this thing goes? Look, it's such a legit, and I thought it was such a mature, great way to approach it, because in sport, like I said, we do get so far ahead of ourselves all the time. Enjoy the now, because right now it's fun. And I don't think a Coleman will be in play. I do think people will call. I don't think he'll be in play. Mm-hmm. Next year, that's a bigger decision. That's when his contract's up. And when Rasmus Anderson is up, that's a legitimate conversation all year long, but not this year. Not to say it couldn't happen. I just don't think it's something we should be burdening Flames fans with talking about too much. Yeah,
I agree. I wonder if that is something that evolves here as we move towards the deadline. How close to Hannah are you as we're talking?
The roads are a mess. We're barely out of Calgary right now. We still got 2 hours to get to Hannah. It's not good. No, no.
Okay.
But I'll tell you right now, this latte that I ordered is delicious, and yours is getting cold. So I don't know how we're going to get this to you.
Yeah, if you could courier it or something like that. You know my address.
Yeah. Yes, I do.
All right, well, that's a good way to wrap it up. Drive safe. enjoy the tournament. Hey, buddy, thanks as always.
Thanks, buddy. Enjoy the game tomorrow, and look forward to chatting next week. I'll be out on the road next week with the team. And that'll be a very interesting and a very emotional road trip. So look forward to talking about
that. We'll probably have to do it on Thursday next week. So because they play Friday. So yeah, we'll do it next Thursday then, pal.
Okay, my man. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, EF. That's Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca as we start to wrap things up this hour on Flames Talk. The Eric Francis Hour brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. The Alberta horse racing and breeding industry cares for their horses, employs Albertans, and contributes to the economy. Visit thehorses.com. 18 plus. Please play responsibly.